This is the State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. Simon Bolivar is a heroic name in South American history. During the 19th century, he was the liberator of six countries on the continent. And if you ask about him these days in the United States, chances are you'll get blank looks. But Bolivar was a big fan of our country and heavily influenced by the principles of the American Revolution. In fact, he spent some time in the States traveling and talking to citizens about their new country. A new exhibit at the Frederick Jameson Gallery on the campus of Duke University highlights the footprint that Simon Bolivar left on our country. It is called Bolivar Boulevard. And we have Miguel Chirinos with us. He is a local historian who has collected the items. Welcome, Miguel Chirinos. Good to have you here.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
Also, Miguel Rojas Sotelo. He is a special events coordinator for the Center for Latin American and Caribbean Studies at Duke University, who curated the exhibit. Miguel Rojas, welcome.
Thank you, Frank, for having us.
Miguel Rojas, tell us how this exhibit came about.
As you know, probably you may know, Latin America is having big celebrations by 8 countries last year because of the bicentennial of independence. And we had several events last year about that. But this year, in 2011, we're celebrating also the bicentennial of independence of Venezuela. And, of course, the most recognizable figure, historical figure, is Simón Bolívar, that not only worked to liberate Venezuela, but 6 other nations. We got this very interesting proposal by Miguel Chirinos about a collection he has been working on for more than a decade, and we said, this sounds really interesting. It's an aspect that is not really known well, the footprint of Simón Bolívar in the U.S. Let's work about it.
Miguel Chirinos, tell us about that collection that you've been working on. What's in it?
Sure. Well, first of all, I've been traveling through the States for the last 10 years, visiting different places with the name Bolivar, most of them, or all of them, interviewed to the South American Liberator. So I've been collecting different items from postcards, license plates, pictures, or different things that I remember all this about this South American hero. And at the same time, doing some researching, about those towns, prominent families who establish or create those towns, and taking some pictures, of course, as an evidence that those towns still exist. And there are around 16 cities or towns in the United States, 1 county in Mississippi, and 4 Bolivia, called Bolivia, and including one of them here in North Carolina in Brownsville County, close to Wilmington.
So you've got that. So the first surprise then, Miguel Rojas, might be the fact that so many places, and we're going to talk a little bit about products, took their name from this man who has pretty much fallen out of the U.S. memory.
Yes, and that was the thing that caught our eye, is how prominent Bolivar was in his own historical time, but how, in a way, Bolivar, the name, became part of the popular consciousness in the U.S. We have 17 towns, boroughs, neighborhoods called Bolivar. We have not only these towns, we have dozens of monuments, memorials on his name. We have also rivers, mountains, peninsulas named after Bolivar. And probably the people who live in Bolivar, Missouri, don't know anything about Simón Bolívar, but they know everything about Bolivar, Missouri.
So how was it? What was he in the public imagination at that time? The U.S. had already gained its independence. Now the Spanish nations of South America were about to become nations.
I think that's something that Miguel's research is trying to address, is how information was circulating not only from the north to the south, but also from the south to the north, that there was an interesting network of things going on. And we have to remember that Bolivar came to ask, he came being a very young person to the U.S. to visit these 13 original colonies. But he was also trying to look for help to liberate these countries. Then the independence of South America was an enterprise that needed help from many other nations, free nations. United States was one, Haiti was another one, and they were trying to find, you know, ways to do it. Then it created a network, a very important network that became real, and we have the, you know, a concrete evidence, the liberation of these nations.
We should talk a little bit and step back, I think, at this point, talk about Simón Bolívar himself, who he was, and what that liberation movement looked like right. in South America in the early part of the 19th century.
Yeah, and I would like to add another thing in regards of the origin of some towns with the name Bolívar in America. Last month, for example, I had the opportunity to visit Bolívar, Tennessee, and I found out one of the prominent family, one of the prominent person in that town was Colonel Ezequiel Polk, that he was the grandfather of the President James Knox Polk. He created Bolívar, Tennessee, but other two grandsons went to Missouri and create or establish Bolívar, Missouri. Wow. So another nephew, who was well known as a bishop and also became a general during the Civil War, Leonidas Polk, have a plantation in Bolívar County, Mississippi. So it's very interesting, you know, to see how prominent families in America, they admire, of course, Simón Bolívar, but also Colonel Ezequiel Polk was a part of a troop of Washington during the American Revolution. But at the same time, he admired, you know, the South American hero. So it's the kind of things that I try to find out and to, you know, share with the people.
Not only place this. Names, but products, including oil.
Yes, and that's a very important one that we discovered and we're trying to underline in the exhibit. In the exhibit, you will find several images that are, you know, the product of this collection and the research of Chirinos. And one is very interesting is that in Allegheny County, New York, there is a small town called Bolívar. And that town is one of the foundation places of the modern oil business. Actually, oil business started in the East Coast of North America in New York State. And there is this small town. And then we have in the exhibit a series of images of oil towers, historical oil towers, and products that are, for example, Bolívar motor oil. Right? And if you think about Bolívar coming from Venezuela, a Bolívar town in New York State that is the founding place for the oil business, that is the driver of the international economy, global economy. And then you think about Venezuela as an oil country, right? It's all these little connections that suddenly appear there and that we are trying to address with a very visual, in a very visual way through the exhibit.
That's right.
Bolívar himself was hoping to create a federation on the model of the U.S. That was part of his reason for the trip here.
Yeah, in a sense, at first he was fascinating. There is some evidence of the experiences of Bolívar here. There are a few letters that he wrote and sent to his friends in Europe and in Venezuela about his experiences in the U.S. And one of these things he mentioned was that finally, he had the opportunity to look at democracy and freedom in practice, right? In practice, not as an ideal, because he was coming from Europe. Things were not going really well there. Then he came here and he saw the thing happening, right? And for a moment, he thought that a federation could be the way to go further. But during the process of independence of South America, he found out that the Federation wasn't really the way. Actually, he was a centrist, if I'm not wrong, right, Miguel? Yeah.
Well, as a matter of fact, also the American Constitution was adopted in Venezuela, but it was translated first here for Manuel Villavicencio in 1810 in Philadelphia. And probably is the first Spanish translation of the American Constitution that later was adopted by the Venezuelan Congress in 1811. That is July 5th after the date of the American Independence Day. So it's amazing to find out, you know, that kind of coincidence or and how are related, you know, each other.
that when those countries or colonies became free and independent, they formed something called Gran Colombia.
Yes.
And there was one state. Bolivar himself didn't want to become what was hoping to become something more like a president. He ended up being a dictator. He realized there was probably no other way.
Yeah, in this historical process, you need to realize that the transition from a monarchy to a democracy, things are not easy, clear cut. He was a person who was a very humble person. Actually, he surrendered his entire estate for the benefit of the nations.
A substantial estate. He was one of the richest guys in the world.
He was one of the richest guys of the world. He owned slaves in the thousands, mines, plantations, small fleets. I mean, the Bolivar family was very, very prominent.
And one other footnote at this point. So this independence movement is an independence movement among the aristocrats and the elite who are now owners in this new world.
That's true. But there are some indications and actually evidences in which that tell a different story. The armies of Bolivar were composed and in some in the leadership were not only aristocrats, were people, you know, from mulatto origin, coming from very humbled origins. And we have free slaves fighting in the independence. We have mestizos fighting in the independence. We have people coming from Haiti, for example, fighting independence. Alexander Petion was one of the big supporters of Bolivar, giving him weapons, money, soldiers to accomplish his mission.
Yeah, and we should point that out. Not only did he visit the United States, he visited the other democracy, the new democracy in the new world, and that was Haiti, which had won its freedom in a slave revolt.
Yeah, several times, right, Miguel?
As a matter of fact, three times Alexander Petion helped Bolivar, and one of the conditions is to free the slaves.
Free the slaves, and he did. He did free the slaves.
In 1821.
Was part of the entire project was to free the slaves. And before Bolivar was Francisco Miranda also fighting help in Haiti as the a free nation to accomplish this mission. He couldn't, but then he was part of the entire other process.
Sure. As a matter of fact, he organized an expedition in 1806 from New York, but unfortunately he was defeated for the Spanish people in Venezuela. But he is well known as the precursor of independence of Spanish colonies.
And we have this connection, U.S., Haiti, and Latin America. And then we'll have something that goes dark in the mind of Bolivar about the U.S. That probably we'll explore in another exhibition. But in this one, Bolivar is about the celebration of the image of this popular historical figure in the American landscape.
You're saying the going dark, you mean when the U.S., when Americans begin to forget or not pay attention, or his impressions of the U.S.?
His impressions of the U.S. during his lifetime as president of Gran Colombia. He tried to organize the first Pan-American Union. It was actually called
The Congress of Panama.
The League and Perpetual Confederation, the Treaty of the Union, was the first organization that brought countries, free countries, together in the hemisphere, right? And he didn't want to invite the U.S. because a few years earlier, this is 1826, in 1823, the U.S. Signed the famous Monroe Doctrine, and they was supposed to be U.S. was supposed to be a neutral country during this fight, but Bolivar found out that that was not the case. Then he was he had his problems with the U.S. At that point, and it's interesting because that was the first step for a real Pan-American Union that then, well, less than 100 years after, the U.S. is going to lead completely, right, with the constitution of the Pan-American Union and the launch of one of the items we have in the exhibit, right?
The Pan-American Expo in Buffalo, 1901. Yeah,
exactly. And we have a mention of that. We have the original poster of the Pan-American World Expo. And it's interesting because in the poster, it features Simón Bolívar crossing the Andes, But this expo is taking place in Buffalo and is launching the idea of union among America. And also a very interesting other historical fact
that was that President William McKinley, you know, during the grand opening was shot and was and later he died in that place. So it wasn't a tragic, you know, but was remembered for that episode.
Miguel Chunas, let me ask you, what got you going on this? Why did you start this collection? How did you get interested?
Well, first of all, I'm originally from Venezuela, so I'm living here in the States for the last 15 years, especially here in North Carolina. So, and when I tried to find out about all these historical facts, so I'm also a freelance writer, so I started to do research when Bolivar visited the United States in 1807. And then now I'm finishing my second book about the towns and cities named Bolivar in the United States. And there is another work in progress about the statues and monuments of Simon Bolivar in the United States, too. So I'm feel, you know, very, very excited about this and also to be a part of this exhibition that, with Miguel's help, have been fantastic. It has been a very interesting experience to be a part of this.
Both of you for being on the show. Miguel Chirinos, a local historian, Miguel Rojas, thanks both for being on the program.
Thank you very much, Frank. Just to remember the people, the exhibition is open at the Frederick Jameson Gallery in East Campus, Duke University, up to, well, September the 20th.
The collection is called Bolivar Boulevard, and Miguel Rojas Sotelo, Special Events Coordinator for the Center for Latin American and Caribbean Studies at Duke, curated the exhibit. It is on display until September 22nd. For more information about the exhibit, go to bolivarboulevard.wordpress.com, and Bolivar is spelled B-O-L-I-V-A-R. That's the state of things for today. Thank you for listening. Our website is stateofthings.org. You can follow us on Facebook as well. This is North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.